WDAE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A fight between two groups who knew each other escalated to a mass shooting last night in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Three people are dead and 15 others injured.
Officers arrived on the scene and began treating people immediately while trying to deal with the chaos of that situation. Bystanders, some of them had already started administering treatment.
Las Cruces Police Chief Jeremy Story, no arrests yet. After going into a Rome hospital 5 weeks ago with pneumonia, Pope Francis will be discharged back to the Vatican tomorrow, says one of his doctors, Sergio Alfieri.
The Holy Father, at the time of his admission to Gemelli Hospital, presented an acute respiratory failure due to polymicrobial infection, viruses, bacteria, and mycetes.
Mycoses are fungus infections. The wife of former Massachusetts governor and Democratic presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, Kitty Dukakis, has died, says her son. She was 88. This is ABC News. Thousands of passengers remain stuck by delays and cancellations from yesterday's power outage at London's Heathrow Airport. The British government has ordered an investigation into what it calls the country's energy resilience after the electrical substation fire to see if any upgrades are needed for security. The U.S. Coast Guard and other agencies searching for three people, an adult and two minors, missing after their boat capsized yesterday near Goat Island on the St. Johns River in Jacksonville, Florida. City Fire and Rescue Department Captain Eric Prosswimmer.
We have recovered the boat, and it was flipped. We flipped it back over, and it was towed back to the dock, and FWC is doing their investigation on it now.
Those are fish and wildlife officials. Four people who were on top of the overturned boat were rescued by a Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Marine unit. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Barry Mack, you were supposed to be on the show about 3 weeks ago, but I got really sick. Like, I slept on a mattress that you might have driven to the dump.
Still like last time, I am actively smuggling in mattresses from Minnesota because they recycle them for free.
You should probably keep that on the download.
Well, yeah, but how am I going to get any business unless I start talking about it, Pete?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
Do you live your life in fear, man? Republicans continue to lead people to believe the boogeyman's coming to get you. It's those immigrants. It's people of color. They're coming to get your babies. Never mind. You live in River Hills, where there's very little crime, if any. What are you afraid of, man? Nobody's coming to get you. And yet, people buy into that foolishness.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is joining forces with Elon Musk and his new government department to cut 10,000 jobs at the U.S. Postal Service. But staff are pushing back. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
American Postal Workers Union President Mark Diamonstein says older adults, veterans, and others depend on the service's commitment to deliver mail to everyone, regardless of where they live, noting the Postal Service delivers to every address in the country, 169 million addresses, and 318 million pieces of mail every day.
Part of the effort on Thursday is to make the postal customers around the country fully aware of this threat to what belongs to them.
In a letter to Congress, DeJoy said the agency needs help with lease renewals on its retail centers and tackling the issue of counterfeit postage. The Trump administration has also floated the idea of privatizing the post office. Supporters argue the change would make the Postal Service run more efficiently and save money. Polling from the Pew Research Center finds 72% of Americans have a favorable view of the Postal Service. Local unions in Kentucky are participating in a National Day of Action tomorrow. Diamonstein explains that more than five decades ago, postal workers won collective bargaining rights. He says the union is prepared to fight back on any attempt to weaken union rights or target worker protections and working conditions.
It's also very important, I think, for the public to be reminded that good living wage jobs help our communities. They help make them stronger. That good jobs turn over in the community to restaurants, to small retail stores, to housing.
According to the APWU, privatization would eliminate more than 600,000 living wage union jobs, including those of more than 70,000 military veterans. That's Nadia Ramlagan. I'm Savannah Tome Olson for Civic Media News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. iHeartRadio weather mostly cloudy tonight, low in the upper 30s. A shower possible. Areas of rain and maybe some snow mixed late tomorrow. Cloudy sky and a high in the mid-40s. Warmer into next week. Some 40s to start, then 50s and 60s later on in the week. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we will take a look at our NCAA basketball brackets after weekend number one. Also, the news of the weekend. Get you caught up. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll hear a segment from Mino and the Mayor out of Green Bay. Jim and John welcome on Cardi Josephson from the Walk to End Alzheimer's, who also brings along a special guest, former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber. Governor Schreiber has recently penned a book called My Two Elaines about the story of caregiving for his wife, Elaine. He writes about having to watch his beloved wife gradually transform from the woman who had gracefully entertained in the executive residence to one who sometimes no longer recognizes him as her husband. Net proceeds from the sales of My Two Elaines will be used to promote Alzheimer's caregiver support programs. Here's their conversation.
Now, back to Mino and the Mayor. Here's John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back, Mino and the Mayor. The Mayor, of course, still on vacation. We got Dennis Peters filling in for us, and thank you to Mark Hewson. Well, right now, we've got a couple of people that are also involved with a very, very serious thing that, again, I swear affects somebody in everybody's family. Cardi Josephson, of course, from the Alzheimer's Foundation, the Walk to End Alzheimer's coming up, and a very, very special guest. We are honored to have this gentleman, and I'm going to leave that to you, Cardi, to introduce this very distinguished gentleman.
Yes, my sidekick for, well, yesterday and today, former Wisconsin Governor, Mr. Marty Schreiber.
Yay. Good morning.
You want a drum roll, Marty?
You're the first governor we've ever had in our studio.
Is that right? Well, thank you. That's quite an honor then for me to do that.
I didn't want to say that should be one of your top honors in your career, but
yeah, and by the way, I see a happy birthday. It's the day your birthday?
It was St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
If I would have known it, I would have signed an executive order for being so intelligent and wise.
I work with the former mayor of Green Bay here every single day, and he's never given me an executive order.
Yeah, well, that's
I think he tried sending one to get me out of town one day. But
was that a restraining order?
Well, maybe that's what it
was. Is that what it was?
One of the two. But, Cardi, thank you for this beautiful food from Uncle Mike's.
You are welcome, John.
It will not
happy
go to
belated.
Waste. Thank you so very much.
You bet.
First of all, I want to talk to sir, I'd like to talk to you about this book that you wrote. I'm a local author, and I like to write books. But this one, I think, is a very poignant personal story of how you got involved with the Alzheimer's Foundation in a way, because it was personal with your wife, correct, sir?
That's correct. And I'll tell you, had it not been for the Alzheimer's Association, quite frankly, I don't know how I would have made it. My wife experienced and died from Alzheimer's over a period of almost 20 years. And in that period of time, I went through what every caregiver goes through, and that's just the grieving, the anxiety, the worry, the depression, the sadness, the feeling of abandonment, the lonely, all of those things come into play. And if it wouldn't have been for the Alzheimer's, I wouldn't have made it. But the title of my book is My Two Elaines. And the first Elaine is a wonderful woman that I married and had, you know, 4 children, 13 grandchildren, now 11 great-grandchildren.
What a beautiful woman.
But the second Elaine, same person began to appear when she was approximately 63, 64 years of age. And she would get lost driving to and from places she had been going to and from for 10 years. A great cook, mess up recipes so badly she would cry, coming up with stories that I couldn't believe she would even imagine. That was the beginning of the second Elaine. And there were some things that I learned too late. We missed out on moments of joy. We could have had greater opportunities to experience helping each other live our best life possible. But I was arrogant. I was self-centered. I said I could do it alone. And I tell you, I got involved with the caregiver's poisons, a little bit of alcohol. And all of a sudden, it began to dawn on me that I was not really serving the one I love by being so self-centered. I was not serving her by refusing to ask for help. I was not serving her by not taking care of myself. So that's why I wrote the book. I want to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive.
But that comes from a place of love, though. You know, you want to be the one that takes care of things. You want to be the one, because that's the role that you do when you say, I do. You know, and to do those things, I think that's very commendable. But, yeah, you're right, though. I think it does add up after a while, and it can become, you know, out of your wheelhouse of what you can do. And it's only natural, and I'm just glad that you, like you say, you found the association to help you with that.
But I think on the other hand, I think it also opened your eyes just how tough of a foe this is.
Yes.
Because everybody thinks, well, I'm the strong guy. I was governor. I can handle this. But Alzheimer's is such a tough enemy, isn't it, Carrie?
Oh, absolutely. And just caregiving in general, whether you're caring for somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia or any other situation, it takes its toll, and you really can't do it yourself. It's about really having a good support team around you.
I think everybody knows somebody who has been affected by
everybody.
It. And that's it. It didn't used to be like that. I think it's something that's kind of growing. There's more and more diagnoses.
Yes, exactly.
And it's horrible.
Yes. We're living longer, but also we're getting better about diagnosing it.
One thing I want to make everyone aware of. 40% of caregivers die before their loved one due to stress-related illness.
Really?
A person who is a caregiver has a 60% higher death rate than non-caregivers.
What?
So what the point is that when there is a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, there are two patients, the person who is ill and then also the caregiver. And unless we realize that, we're going to just see caregiving among all of the things in the world is probably one of the most challenging. Because of all of the emotions and experiences you go through as you see your loved one disappear almost daily. And my heart goes out to every caregiver, to every family who is dealing with this Alzheimer's disease. And that comes us right down to what Carrie is about. And that is to help people better learn, cope, and survive, making sure we get the research involved. And if I could encourage anything, it's to get involved with Carrie, the Alzheimer's Association, and their walk.
You know what? I've just in the ones in, from my family members where I've dealt with this, okay? The one thing that, again, why this is such a vicious thing is because there will be moments of total clarity of you're talking to that exact same person you've known your whole life, and then 10 minutes later, you don't recognize the person. They don't recognize you. That's got to be an extremely frustrating feeling, right?
Well, so Elaine was in assisted living for roughly 8.5 years, so we're having lunch. And she's beginning to cry. And she looks at me, and I said, why are you crying? Well, she says, I'm beginning to love you more than my husband. Well, I didn't ask her what's wrong with her turkey husband. I didn't do that at all. But the point is, and what is so important, it was not necessary for her to know my name in order for our hearts to touch.
Sure.
And many times people say, well, that person doesn't recognize me. Well, I don't want any. No, hearts can touch by holding a hand, by giving a hug, by singing a song, by giving a smile. And so people could please understand that.
I've learned that, too.
I just want to reintroduce you. We're with Carrie Josephson, Alzheimer's Foundation, Marty Schreiber, former governor for the state of Wisconsin, who wrote a phenomenal book, it looks like, My Two Elaines, talking about learning, coping, and surviving as an Alzheimer's caregiver.
That's a beautiful picture of the two of you, by the way. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. That goes back, maybe when we were 22 or 23 years old, and I know I look only 39, but I'm 85, but you can get sort of a pushback.
I think it's a beautiful thing that you said regarding the conversation with your wife that I've learned something, too, of what you meet them where they're at. Mm-hmm. And from that point, that's where you can get the traction on the communication and whatnot. And I think it's a beautiful thing that you shared that.
Okay, what you just said is brilliant. It's the key to it, joining their world. As long as we try and keep them in our world, it's impossible.
Right.
And so, but to join them where they are at is one of the most important, best things you can do, both for the person ill as well as the caregiver and the entire family.
Carrie, could you put that into words, what you've seen in people doing that?
I think what Marty's talking about is, you know, sometimes people, you know, they get a diagnosis and the caregiver maybe don't understand exactly, you know, what they're dealing with. And, you know, it does, it can get tiring when, you know, the person is repeating themselves or asking the same question over and over or saying something that's not at all correct. But it's really about not battling with them. You know, does it matter if they think that it's 3 p.m. instead of 9 a.m? I know Marty talks oftentimes about his wife wanting to have a glass of wine in the morning. Who cares? Just roll with it.
Before I went to print with the book, I find a series of notes and journals that Elaine had been keeping. Each chapter begins with some of Elaine's notes or journals. That gives us a thorough understanding of what it's like to be diagnosed with this disease, to have all of those questions come into mind, to think you're normal, to not think you're normal, to worry about whether or not things are going along, what's going to happen in the future, and then to get angry with. People have told me that that book has really made a difference in their life, helping them learn, cope, and survive. And the notes that Elaine wrote that are in the book gives us that kind of insight.
What is the process like of going from, I think maybe I'm not quite, not like I used to be, for example, how does that process start to getting diagnosis aspect of it? I mean, what kind of time span are we talking about? And, you know, from that aspect, what was your experience like?
Well, she was getting lost, as I said, going to and from places. And I was in refusal. You know, I didn't want to accept that. I didn't want to accept
denial,
that at all.
Kind of?
I was denial. Yeah. And so we finally went to a family doctor who said, you better check this out. And so we went to a psychiatrist. They have what they call the mini test. What day is it? Who's president of the United States? Do you use real cream for your hair? All those kinds of things.
I'm just throwing it out there.
My
talents. You know, I got these. Okay, I'm reading these things from her notes.
Yes.
Wow, you're not hiding anything with what she said here.
I didn't want to.
Yep. I got this one. Date unknown, but this is from your wife, Elaine. I wish my Alzheimer's would dissipate. I'd like to be the smart wife and mother I used to be. Now I have to waste so much time just trying to figure out what I should be doing without seeming as smart as I used to be. I need to rely on Marty for everything, and I'm very lucky he continues to keep me. Life gets more difficult every day.
And so if you read further, she gets to the point where she gets very angry with me because she felt I was controlling her. I want you to know that when we had prayed together and we had cried together, but until I read her notes did I ever understand the courage that it takes to be diagnosed with this illness and go forward. And never did I realize that. Elaine, it didn't happen on a Thursday. It happened on a Friday. Elaine, it wasn't the Smiths of John. What is going on is, why is she being criticized for thinking things? She didn't know what she said when she said it. And so I wrote the book. I want to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive. I want to have that journey, as challenging as it is, to be as fruitful and as productive of happy moments as possible.
I just want to read one thing. I believe this is from you, a little excerpt you have in there. What I wish I had known, asking others to help does not mean you're not strong enough or not trying hard enough.
I try and drive home the point that to ask for help means you're not giving up. And also to not ask for help is a sign of arrogance.
Okay, one more I want to read. I should have enlisted a couple of friends to be my team captains who could do the asking and scheduling for me. That's a very practical thing in that aspect.
Well, there again, it's a selfishness. I can do it myself.
Right.
And in the meantime, I'm sort of digging my own grave because I'm not taking care of myself.
Wow, this is fascinating. We got to send her a quick break. We'll be back with more. Carrie Josephson and Marty Schreiber, former Wisconsin governor, walk to end Alzheimer's. We'll talk about that when we come back. Okay, Carrie?
All right.
Great. Thanks.
Got my chips cashed in, keep
trucking. Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Folks, we've got to talk about Derek Van Orden. The second-term congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd District is at it again, dodging public meetings and making all kinds of unhinged comments.
As many scramble and struggle to understand the chaos of what's happening in Washington, D.C. and how it's impacting people here in Wisconsin, Van Orden has been as frustrating and disrespectful as ever. In one instance, Van Orden took to social media to berate a veteran who had been fired from his job at the VA by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. And the veteran in question is simply someone who was just reaching out to his congressman, looking for answers. Van Orden's office has also hastily canceled public meetings, and he has made some especially wild accusations about people who have been attending these public events. Congressman Van Orden needs to stop this unhinged madness, and more importantly, be more available and accountable to his constituents.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show down in Madison. Every week, John and Gordy talk with Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe and host of the Midwest Farm Report. This time around, they talk chocolate milk and also a new study out showing just how rural Wisconsin is these days.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in the morning, broadcasting from the capital city, Madison, Wisconsin.
Chilly start this morning, about 33 degrees. Highs today in mid-50s, a mix of clouds and some sunshine. We'll check in with Brittany Merlot in about an hour and get the latest on the weekend weather. Right now, Pam Yonke is with us. Good morning, Pam, from Midwest Farm Report. How you doing?
Good. I was talking to somebody yesterday that came through the building, and they were a little bit shocked at our weather. I'm like, wait a minute. Yesterday was the first day of spring. I said, It's Wisconsin boys basketball. I said, if you're a homer like me and grew up in this state, you could just about predict what we were going to have with the weather this week. So safe travels to everybody that's coming back to Madison for the rest of the playoff weekend.
Yeah.
Of course, yes.
Let's hope they're drinking a lot of milk while they're here.
I was telling you guys that's one thing that we've been kind of bringing up in conversations from time to time, how the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin is one of the strong messages you'll see in a lot of the sport venues for high school athletes, is reminding them that chocolate milk has been scientifically proven to be one of the best ways to recharge after a workout. And a lot of school systems, through the help of their dairy farmers, have actually put coolers in their locker rooms so that when the athletes come off the field or off the floor and are kind of looking to rebuild after a game, they have nice ice cold chocolate milk to help their bodies do it.
Boy, I love chocolate milk.
Yeah, me too.
It's the best. It really is. Didn't they take it out of the menu for a while, school lunch menu?
Oh, yeah. You very rarely will you see chocolate milk on even the low-fat chocolate milk. It has a dilly of a time trying to get onto school lunch menus. That's kind of a never-ending anthem out in Washington, D.C. by a lot of dairy farm advocates, is trying to just get the right milk into schools at the right temperature in the right containers to keep it attractive to kids. It's semantics.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Well, now there's a new research facility that you mentioned to us off the air, and they're taking a look at the real makeup of Wisconsin's rural community. And this sounds pretty interesting, actually. What did they come up with?
I did a poll this morning on my early show and just asked people, do you think Wisconsin is still rural? I mean, if you think about it, a lot of us are of the age where we might have grown up rural, but obviously Wisconsin's dynamics have changed quite a little bit. So there's a group called the Rural Policy Institute. It started last July. It is not an advocacy group. It's not a lobbying group. It's basically a group that's trying to answer these kinds of questions for policy development in the future. They're not going to introduce policy or anything like that. They just want to be a think tank of sorts to try to provide information in areas where there hasn't been any. this is one of the first things that they tackled. And basically what they found is you really got to define what is rural. I'll give you an example. So you guys know where Waupaca is, right? Up in the central Sands area. Okay, now that's a perfect example of rural adjacent, they call it. So Waupaca's probably, I don't know, I haven't looked lately, but it's probably got a population of about, what, 5 to 10,000 people, right?
That sounds right,
It's in kind of the middle of nowhere, no disrespect to the central Sands, but Waupaca is surrounded by rural. So those are the kinds of things they're pointing out. Same thing for some of you that go up to Rhinelander. Rhinelander's probably got a population maybe 10, 12,000, but it's surrounded by rural. So what they've done in this scientific breakout is take a look at population densities and where they're at in Wisconsin. And it looks like it's about 40% very rural, probably about another 20% we could call rural adjacent. You've got about 40%, your Green Bay's, La Crosse's, Eau Claire's, Madison's, Milwaukee's, that would be urban. And then you've got the remaining percentage that are in kind of the suburbs, shall we say. But it's really all designed to try to make sure that people that are elected from areas like Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, pay attention to the fact that the policy that they're putting in play has a major impact on rural and rural adjacent citizens.
Well, that's interesting.
Interesting study. Yeah. Pam, we got a question from a listener. Throw this question in the mix here from a listener. John and Gordy ask Pam what we can do to protect family farms from huge corporate farm takeovers. That's kind of a big question, but what's your take on that?
Maybe we tackle that at another time. I think it's a question that's worth discussing, but it's a big one, and it all goes back to a lot of it is family dynamics. What are you going to do if the kids don't want to farm? Mom and dad can only do it for so long. You have to try to come up with a succession transition plan. Maybe you reach out to the kids' neighbor friends that's still farming. That's what I've mentioned to you guys before. I get riled up a little bit when people say, we're losing farms. We're not losing farms. They're just looking different. The cows go to the neighbors. The land is rented by the neighbors, but that farm is still there. So I appreciate the question. I really do. And we talk about it a lot, but it might be a little big for us to tear into in a couple minutes on the Gordy and John show.
Gotcha. Oh, thank you for getting the billing right on the name of the show. Appreciate that.
One time.
Never mind, John.
All right.
You missed it.
I was actually just contemplating the other topic we were going to talk about, and that is the milk movement. What is that all about?
Well, really, it's kind of helping consumers better understand how dairying is changing. Now, Wisconsin is still obviously very robust. We're number two in the nation as far as milk production, but things are changing. We're starting to see big, major cheese plants going in places like South Dakota? Kansas.
Wow, Dakota. Kansas?
Things like that. And I'm not just talking little ones. These are whoppers, fellas. And it's something that we've got to kind of keep in mind when it comes to Wisconsin's dairy competitive edge and making sure that we're recognizing, just like our lives on a daily basis, the dairy industry and its look and its flow of milk changing too. We might be sending some Wisconsin milk to Kansas to help them power that cheese plant that they're bringing online. But like I said, I thought it was worth reminding people that, holy Moses, milk moves a long distance in the United States, and we're lucky we've got as many cheesemakers in Wisconsin to use local use of it.
Well, that champion cheesemaker was from Wisconsin. He's now in another state, we're importing the cheesemakers and now the milk, so what the heck?
There you go. All good. All right, Pam. Well, thank you very much. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again Monday morning. Thank you.
All right, buddy. It's always a pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Pam Yonke from the Midwest Farm Report. That's actually coming up right around the corner right here. And then it's Idiocracy time on John and Gordy in the Morning, WMDX for a Friday. Good morning.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A fight between two groups who knew each other escalated to a mass shooting last night in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Three people are dead and 15 others injured.
Officers arrived on the scene and began treating people immediately while trying to deal with the chaos of that situation. Bystanders, some of them had already started administering treatment.
Las Cruces Police Chief Jeremy Story, no arrests yet. After going into a Rome hospital 5 weeks ago with pneumonia, Pope Francis will be discharged back to the Vatican tomorrow, says one of his doctors, Sergio Alfieri.
The Holy Father, at the time of his admission to Gemelli Hospital, presented an acute respiratory failure due to polymicrobial infection, viruses, bacteria, and mycetes.
Mycoses are fungus infections. The wife of former Massachusetts governor and Democratic presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, Kitty Dukakis, has died, says her son. She was 88. This is ABC News.
Over 100 years of serving Southwest Wisconsin, all of us at Jones Chevrolet.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield, this is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Across the line, right side, he'll launch it for three at the horn. He got it at the buzzer to the rim, and he sends it down with the left hand. Right side shooting for the win. Got it! Bronson Koenig! Step back three straight on. Got it! Ice, cold, blooded, Sam Decker, and it's career win number 200. For head coach Greg Gard. Snaps off another three. Book it! Oh my goodness! Don't wake him up! Greg Kaminsky, a single game school record, 43 points. I can't believe I'm going to say it, but here it comes. The Wisconsin Badgers are going to the Final Four.
Badger basketball is on the air. Today's game is brought to you by American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Favic Rents for all your equipment rental needs throughout Badgerland. And by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the official ticketing partner of the Wisconsin Badgers. Find tickets to Badger games and more. SeatGeek. Welcome to the Badger Shootaround.
In downtown Denver, Colorado, the round of 32 of this NCAA tournament, the Wisconsin Badgers. Out of the Big Ten Conference against Big 12 opponents, BYU. The Cougars 25-9 coming into this game. Winners of 10 of their last 11, including an 80-71 victory against VCU on Thursday afternoon. The Badgers are 27-9, matching those 27 wins, matching the most for this program since the 2016-17 team, which incidentally went to the Sweet 16 and just did miss getting to the Elite Eights. The Badgers trying to get back to the round of 16 for the first time since 2017. As for BYU, they're trying to get there for the first time since 2011. Alongside Brian Butch, I'm Matt LePay. Settle in. This one's going to take a while because the Michigan-Texas A&M game started 15 minutes later than originally scheduled. So the tip time, it's going to be a while. So
that just means we can pay some more bills. That's all right. Give great insight. That's what I mean. We're going to just give great insight.
Have you noticed the scoreboard? The video board here is really big.
Should I get this out of the way right now versus during the game? Wow, that TV screen up there is huge.
Glad you know your court awareness has always been an asset.
Needed to worry about one thing. Where the rim was, catch the ball, shoot the ball. All right, that's all I needed to worry about. I wasn't passing.
And now, as a broadcaster, you need to know where the bathrooms are, the food line, and that's where you get the water, where anything that's free. A game in front of us is at halftime. Texas A&M leading Michigan 39-35. The Big Ten off to a roaring start in this NCAA tournament. 9-0, Purdue winning earlier this afternoon, knocking out McNeese. So the league, this tournament's still in the first weekend, but quite the start. I don't know if you make judgments about a league in this. I know,
You shouldn't. Everybody will.
I mean, there were years.
But everybody will.
Yeah, there were years the Big Ten looked like the best conference in the country and couldn't get anybody to the second weekend. But 9-0, that's a pretty good start here.
It's a great start. Like I said, you shouldn't make judgments on it, but the records are what the records are, and the Big Ten showed really well right now this first weekend here in the NCAA tournament. That's always a good thing. I didn't know how deep this league is. And I thought some of those matchups that could go either way, really, you know, the Big Ten played well. I thought UCLA looked really good. I thought Illinois looked really good. Just some of those teams that didn't know how those matchups were going to go. You felt comfortable and confident in Maryland. I felt confident in Michigan State, even though that was a little close. Felt confident in Wisconsin. Those were the three teams that I thought would probably get to the second weekend. Well, we've already got one in there, Purdue, that's past the round of 32 and into the Sweet 16, and we'll see who else can do it. Hopefully our Wisconsin Badgers can find a way to beat this BYU team who's really good. It was really good.
Yeah, we'll get into BYU as we move forward. Purdue really controlled the game against McNeese, winning 76-62. They were up 20-plus, got sloppy down the stretch, but the outcome never in doubt. This Matt Painter's team gets to the Sweet 16 for the sixth time in eight seasons. Arkansas eliminated St. John's 75-66 in the much-hyped matchup of coaches, John Calipari and Rick Pitino. It's Calipari and the Hogs moving on to the round of 16. A game in progress. We mentioned this game here in Denver at the half with A&M leading Michigan 39-35. Texas Tech leads Drake 22-20. That's a West Region game, about 7.5 minutes left in the first half. Drake, an 11 seed. Tech is a number 3 seed. So the Badgers and BYU with a Sweet 16 berth on the line. The winner will go home, albeit briefly, and then head on to Newark. The Sweet 16 games will happen Thursday in Newark, New Jersey. Badgers trying to get there for the first time in 8 years. We are, well, considerably more than an hour away from the opening tip. We won't lie. We will have our normal pregame programming. We'll, of course, hear from head coach Greg Gard. We'll check in with Badgers graduate student Stephen Crow. Had a good game against Montana. The Badgers defeating the Grizzlies on Thursday, 85-66. Up next, Butchie and I will continue here in Denver, Colorado. The Badgers and BYU, the NCAA tournament round of 32. Back in a couple of minutes. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
Over 100 years of serving Southwest Wisconsin, all of us at Jones Chevrolet are honored to continue the tradition. We love to help you choose a new Chevrolet. We love to help with maintenance, repairs, and accessories, too. Schedule a service appointment, see our inventory, connect with a sales professional, and get pre-approved for competitive financing at JonesChev.com. Come see the exciting new Chevrolets. Jones Chevrolet, over 100 years of being your Chevy truck headquarters. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Experience the ultimate in snow removal with Cub Cadet snowblowers from McFarland's. Engineered for performance and durability, Cub Cadet snowblowers are designed to make your winter easier. With a wide range of models to choose from, you can find the perfect snowblower to fit your lifestyle. Visit McFarland's Retail and Service Center in Sauk City and discover the Cub Cadet difference.
Elevate your fitness journey with SUPS, your one-stop shop for premium nutritional supplements. Discover the best formulas from top brands at unbeatable prices. Say goodbye to fake reviews and pixie dust blends. Experience the SUPS difference today, always fueling local athletes. Call 800-968-0993, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5.
Attention farmers and folks in need of quality supplies. Engine Creek Farm Store has got you covered. Located at 11678 Yuba Drive, Hillsboro, Wisconsin, Engine Creek Farm Store is your local oasis for all things farm and machinery supplies. From essential tools to supplies that keep your farm running smoothly, they've got it all. And guess what? Engine Creek Farm Store goes beyond the farm. You can also pick up some rugged clothes and boots for those hardworking days. Give them a call at 608-528-4001.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Round two of this NCAA tournament, Wisconsin and BYU here today in Denver. Before we talk about BYU, let's recap Montana alongside Brian Butch. I'm Matt LePay. You said you weren't nervous. I thought you were kind of fidgety. When it was 51-47 and then Carter Gilmore hits that, it's a really big three in the moment because this crowd was turning. It was doing what we have seen in the past. If you otherwise don't care, you're going to go with the underdog.
A little veteran savvy, maybe helping the Badgers out, at least in that case. Gilly's been through a lot. He's made some big plays in big moments, and kudos to him for stepping up on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at that game and watch it obviously unfold, yes, Montana made a run. Yes, they made a couple of threes when that lead could have expanded. But it just felt like there was control. And in the losses this year, it didn't feel like there was necessarily control at times. It felt like there was bigger runs, different teams were making. Even that Michigan towards the end, it just felt like Michigan was, in the Big Ten tournament, was making the right plays, and I didn't know if Wisconsin, I mean, it was a tie game with 49 seconds left, but just how were you going to find a way to close out the game? I didn't think it was going to get to a close out the game under four. I just thought Wisconsin was more physical. I thought they were longer. I thought they were better athletes. And then they executed. And I think that's the biggest thing. You can be longer, you can be more physical, but if you don't execute in tough situations, now all of a sudden you're going to put yourself in a bind. But I thought Wisconsin executed. I thought they were executing throughout. I thought really, like, it wasn't like, you know, it was a situation where they weren't scoring the ball well. A couple of breakdowns defensively where all of a sudden there were drives to the basket. Like, okay, you just got to stay in front. We use the word a lot, straight line drives, and that early in that, you know, first half, and I said, they got to clean that up. But overall, it felt like there was really a nice control of what they were trying to do.
And with that, they didn't rely on the three nearly as much as what we have seen. Now, this could be a different story today, but they were able to use their size, which is obvious with Nolan Winter and Stephen Crabb, but John Blackwell really did a good job attacking the basket.
Well, he did. I mean, between him and John, I believe there was 12 fouls drawn, which is a lot. And I thought that was the other part of where they did a really good job of continuing to attack. We've seen at times when the shot hasn't fallen, they've kind of kept going to it. And I thought they made enough threes early on. John made a nice, Tanjay made a nice three to kind of get the and one three that he made. But still understanding that the weakness of Montana was going to be the interior defense, and they stuck to that. Now, BYU, a little different.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's get into that a little bit. This is a team with a ton of firepower, depth that will remind fans of Michigan State, but it's built differently. They've got a lot of shooters here, don't they?
Yeah, Michigan State, you want them to shoot threes. BYU, you want to get them off the line. So completely different as far as the style, as far as the depth, very similar. I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys rolling in, and you have to make sure you know what they do. KYP, know your personnel. There's shooters, there's drivers, there's rollers with their bigs. And understanding what you need to do in those situations when things break down and it's a scramble mode, and all of a sudden you're on a closeout, what are you going to do? Is it a short close where it's not a non-shooter? Now, there's not a lot of non-shooters on the team, and that's why it's so important, because if you go to a non-shooter and you know close out and you fly by that, now you're putting your defense at a disadvantage. And I think that's the biggest thing with this game coming with BYU. Like, you have to know what that is. You have to understand how they fit and how they guard. And then I think the other part of this game that's so intriguing to me is the transition defense, because BYU is one of the better teams getting out in transition without the dribble. And what I mean without the dribble, pass, layup. And they did that against VCU, a team that wants to get up into you. I was very impressed with the way BYU handled the pressure of VCU against Iowa State. Other teams that really got up into them, they didn't have a lot of success. They answered that call on Thursday, and I think that was the one thing that I took away from that BYU VCU game.
And it is I'm kind of learning about the Big 12 now, because I'm very Big 10 centric, obviously. And we were talking about that off air, Butchie. They're scoring at the clip they're scoring at in a league that has a lot of teams that guard you well.
It's a league that hasn't been talked about. It really is. Now, Baylor won on Friday. Houston, they won big. Arizona and that, there's teams that are really good in this Big 12. And I don't think it's a league that's got talked about nearly enough this year because the SEC has taken over. Well, we've kind of seen how the SEC's played out so far. And I think the way that BYU's doing it against teams that are elite defenses, elite. Now, you look at a couple losses against Houston, they weren't able to get going.
I know numbers, there's, you know, two or three, whatever they are. They're the best team. They're the best defensive team, period. Like, I'm not, I don't need to look at numbers. I'm just going to look at, remove all the analytics side of it. I'm going to use my eyeballs. And they're by far the best defensive team in college basketball. So you can see why they kind of got eaten up by Houston ate BYU, you know, as far as what they were trying to do. So I think the thing with BYU, this is what Wisconsin really needs to focus on, is they move the ball well. They get in the paint, and those pocket passes they're really good at. And they were shooting at a clip. Their winning streak that they went on, they were shooting to, you know, I think it was something like 50% from the floor, 55% from the floor, and 40-some percent from three, and 71% from the free throw line. It's like, whoever shoots like that, you're going to win a lot of games. And that's how you get Wisconsin defense, like, needs to try to make those guys uncomfortable.
All right. That's Brian Butch. Stay with us. Our spotlight's coming up next. We'll hear from Stephen Crowell and Carter Gilmore as we get you ready for tip-off of round two of this NCAA tournament. Back in a couple of minutes. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
The Kohl Center, Camp Randall, the Fieldhouse. This is where the magic happens, where the best players lead with passion, fight with power, and win with exceptional performance. And now it's time we add another house to our Badger community. Meet Madison's newest powerhouse player, UW Health East Park Medical Center, home of top doctors and advanced treatments, all under one roof. So no matter the opponent, we're the place to defeat it. UW Health. Remarkable.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
An elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill, complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
Wisconsin is home to some of the best educators in the country. The Outstanding Educator Program is brought to you by WEA Member Benefits, proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. Throughout the season, we are honoring incredible educators who go above and beyond for their students and communities. Do you know an educator who deserves the spotlight? Nominate them today at uwbadgers.com/outstandingeducator. That's uwbadgers.com/outstandingeducator. Because great educators make Wisconsin proud.
Hey Badger fans, Tony Drake with Drake & Associates, proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. How do you prepare for the big game? You strategize, right? Well, retirement is your ultimate big game. And without a solid plan, it's like stepping onto the court without practice. But here's the game changer. Claim your retirement ready toolkit for free from Drake & Associates. Just text Bucky to 262-600-2782. That's Bucky to 262-600-2782. Our Retirement Ready Roadmap is your playbook for financial success. Let's slam dunk your retirement goals together, because at Drake & Associates, we're your winning strategy for a financial game plan.
Drake & Associates is an independent investment advisory firm that offers different investment vehicles. All insurance products are backed by the issuing insurance company. This commercial is provided for informational purposes only.
Our pregame coverage continues. Time for today's Badger Spotlight as we hear from graduate student Stephen Crowell, the 7-footer out of Eagan, Minnesota. Had a terrific 140th start of his Badgers career on Thursday, scoring 18 points, grabbing 4 rebounds against Montana, hitting 2 of 3 shots from the 3-point line. He was 8 of 10 from the floor as the Badgers used that outside shooting touch and also some size and strength to their advantage. Certainly that was the case face with Crow in the win on Thursday against Montana. It's a first tournament game for somebody, and certainly that was the case for Xavier Amos, who had 11 points against the Grizzlies. But for guys like Crow, he's been around the block, and he has been in this type of setting before. I asked him how much experience can matter in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think just having had dealt with the biggest things like the media and everything that surrounds the tournament more so than anything. So it's just trying to tell those guys that haven't been here before just to kind of stick to what's got us here. Just play. It's the same game when we get out there between the lines. Don't get caught up in everything that goes along with it. But and then the other thing I say is just keep enjoying it, having fun, because you never know if you'll get back, honestly. So those are the two biggest things, I think.
That was one of the things I noticed in the first game. You guys, you had smiles on your faces like you were having what looked like casual conversations with the Montana guys. Just at the end of it, it's basketball, and it's what you love to do.
Yeah, and I think when you get too tightly wound, I think that's kind of maybe when the upsets happen, or when you think you're going to get knocked off in that first game. So our goal is just to go out there and have fun, and like I keep saying, enjoy it, and that's what we're going to try to do tomorrow too.
In that game, it got down to four. Yeah. Crowd's getting into it. Obviously, Gilly hits a big three, but what was the feeling at that point, thinking, okay, this is going to be, this could go down to the wire?
Yeah, I mean, at this point of the year, everyone's a good team. There's only 6 or 4 of us left, so we knew it wasn't going to be a blowout necessarily. So just sticking to running our offense, not getting too crazy out there, staying loose, like we said earlier, not getting too tightly wound, because that's when you start forcing, doing stuff like that. So just playing freely and sticking to what got us here, for sure.
Give fans an idea of what your world is like between the games. Do you get caught up in watching other games, or is it mostly, is it rest, recovery, get ready for BYU?
I mean, a lot of it's rest, recovery, watch film, obviously, learn about a team that you've never really seen before and some guys you've never really heard of before. So a lot of it's recovery too, doing what Coach Jim tells us. And then we do watch the games too. I keep going back to the word enjoy it. You got to enjoy it, watch the games, especially when you got an early game like we did yesterday. You got to soak it all in. So
that was one of the things that we wanted, because it was such a quick turn, but in some ways it's better to be first than last. Is there something to be said for that?
I mean, last year I think we were the last game, and when you sit around all day watching the games, I think that might have a little bit of a different effect than if you play early and then watch the games. But I enjoyed playing a little bit earlier yesterday.
As you get ready for BYU, from what the scouting, the films, practice, what jumps out to you about them?
I think them, everything around them surrounds around their offense. I think that's the big thing you hear with them, just the shooters they have, the point guard they got. Then those bigs are relentless. So and then they play really hard too. I think they're one of the most physical teams we've heard in the Big 12. So just trying to match that or exceed it like we have all year, and just trying to slow them down as much as we can. So
the fact that you played some pretty physical teams in the Big Ten, teams that could shoot it, I don't know if comps are fair. Everybody's a little bit different, but you played teams that could shoot it and score it like those guys. So I would imagine that helps you a little bit.
Yeah, I think when you get to this time of the year, playing a diverse schedule really helps you, because we played Arizona, we played Purdue, Marquette, teams that play all different sorts of styles. So I think when you get into a tournament like this, it's nice to go back on that and look at how you fared against those teams and learn from them. So
I'm going to go back to the beginning of the conversation. No matter how many times you've been in this tournament, getting to the first media timeout, there's got to be jitters, I think, and then you realize it's just basketball.
Yeah, I know, for sure. You start to settle in after that first media, and specifically here in Denver, kind of get your wind a little bit in the altitude. But yeah, after that first media, you kind of settle in, realize it's just basketball, and like I keep saying, just stick to what we've done all year, and hopefully that leads to wins. So.
The beauty of this team, we talked about it before, is that you never know who. Yeah. It could be Gilly, it could be Cam, it could be whoever, you, Nolan. That's what makes you guys pretty good, though, right? Pretty dangerous.
The depth's probably the most important thing I think we got this year. So, you know, there's no drop-off when those guys, like you just said, Gilly, your ex, Cam, when they come in the game, you know there's not going to be any drop-off. And if anything, they're exceeding what we're doing. So, it's just been really fun to play with those guys, and we're just looking forward to keeping it going.
That's Badgers big man, Stephen Crow, and that is today's Badgers Spotlight. Stick around. Brian Butch returns as we get you ready for tip-off. The Badgers and BYU, round two of this NCAA tournament. We're at Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado, and we'll continue in just a couple of minutes. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Hiya, you trust the Richland Locker for your meat and poultry, but did you know that it's your source for fish too? Offering haddock and Icelandic cod fillets, the catch of the day is flash frozen to ensure that all of its flavor, nutritional value, and texture are sealed in. Enjoy a taste of the sea. Set sail to the Richland Locker on South Main Street, Richland Center, your local meat market since 1939.
Wisconsin's forest landowners cut timber from their land for a variety of reasons. The timber is mature. Some plan a harvest as part of their management plan. For others, the harvest may be a salvage operation in response to an unexpected natural disaster, such as a fire or windstorm. Landowners have trusted Meister Log & Lumber since 1936. Give professional timber manager Toby Witkowski a call at Meister Log & Lumber at 608-434-4413. Today.
Attention auto enthusiasts. Napa Auto and Truck Parts in Richland Center in Basketball is bringing you huge savings while supplies last. Stock up on Evercraft and Craftsman clearance items. And don't miss out on Cam 2 Brake Clean, just $1.99 per can, sold only by the case of 12. Plus, buy two Griot's Garage Wash and Wax products and save $5. These deals won't last forever. Shop now through April 30th at Napa Auto and Truck Parts.
Your favorite varieties of apples and grapes grow on over 200 acres at Oakwood Fruit Farm. Much of the fruit is sold retail through the farm market, but a wholesale division of the company moves a significant amount of the fruit, as well as custom packing fruit for other local growers. Oakwood Fruit Farm looks forward to seeing you and serving you with the best quality apples and grapes this coming fall. See you in the fall at Oakwood Fruit Farm.
Oakwood Fruit Farms, that's the one for family fun. Oakwood Fruit Farms, that's the one for family.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Our pregame coverage continues here in Denver, Wisconsin, and BYU game in front of us about 4.5 minutes into the second half. Texas A&M leading Michigan 51-42. The tip time was estimated to be 6:45 Central Time. It will very optimistically be 7, realistically probably after that. Central Time. So I know I've done long pregame shows before. I know you've done at least one. Should we get Vosters to call if we need to after the Greenbrier extravaganza?
We might need to. We had a long one New Jersey. Is that where we're at?
Brooklyn. Yeah, last
New
year.
Jersey's next. Yeah, Brooklyn. Yeah, Brooklyn yeah. was a long one too.
It was.
They all go together. We stayed in New York. We went to Brooklyn. I mean, over a bridge. I don't know. Come on,
Mr. Geography.
Somewhere out east.
Well, I tell you what, we're not contractual stuff. We can't get into a lot of detail here. We can't get into the play-by-play of the game in front of us. But I'll just give you my hot take. A&M's pretty good.
They are pretty good.
Yeah, pretty
they
athletic. And Buzz Williams, a former Marquette coach, among other stops. The Badgers would have played a Buzz Williams team in 2017. As a matter of fact, when Buzz was at Virginia Tech, Bronson Koenig going off in that game in Buffalo en route to a Sweet 16 after the Badgers beat Villanova in the second round. But, this A&M outfit. And again, the expanded SEC, it has been interesting to see that conference's commitment to the sport. Now, it's been a little choppy in this tournament. When you have 14 teams in, you're going to have teams lose. That's just kind of how this works. But in a very football-crazy conference, they have in recent years really devoted the resources into basketball, too, haven't they?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, you just look at how they've gone about it. Some of it's been coaches that have kind of got a second chance. And, sometimes it's just been going to get players from the portal. So having the ability to go do that helps. And in the SEC, there's some money there. So that does help as far as what they're going to do. But there's some really good matchups between some SEC schools and some Big Ten schools and the rest of this NCAA tournaments. It's going to be fun to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it is Big Ten and SEC heavy. Not exclusively, but heavy. I mean, BYU obviously very good. Big 12 had a pretty good start. Kansas, a notable exception. The Big East team, the Big East champs, bowing out today in St. John's. Marquette getting beat by New Mexico last night. Still a very good year for Shaka Smart's Golden Eagles.
Yeah.
We have seen this with Wisconsin in some years where Marquette had its best ball in the first half of the season. Once it got into February, that's where most of the losses occurred. But still a very good team. And a New Mexico team that more and more people are finding out, Richard Pitino has found himself a good landing spot.
Oh, it was a bad matchup when I saw it, just because their guard play of New Mexico is really good against Marquette's guard play, and we know how good that is. And now it's just a matter of what exactly, how that needed to play out. And New Mexico just kind of found a way. And, for Marquette, the question was always going to be what were they going to get from the interior, and they just didn't get enough. Last night.
Yeah, but I tell you what, heck of a run for guys like Cam Jones and Stevie Mitchell and David Joplin
a very good year. Ends earlier than what they wanted, but still a very healthy program over there in Milwaukee, the Marquette Golden Eagles. We'll get back to the Badgers here, but first we'll pause 10 seconds for station identification, 10 for an ID. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
As the Michigan A&M game continues, Michigan advancing, another down-to-the-wire game against UC San Diego on Thursday. If Michigan could keep this thing, you know, to two or three possessions, they may have A&M exactly where they want them. You would think the law of averages would catch up, but it hasn't yet for Michigan. They just find ways to win those close games, don't they?
Well, they do, and you saw firsthand last Sunday in the Big Ten tournament. They just find ways to do it now. And one of the things is, one of the reasons they are in a lot of close games is they turn the ball over a lot.
Yeah, they do.
And because of that, you let teams in, or you get behind, or you go through slumps. And I think that's one of the things that's always been the question and will continue to be the question with Michigan, as long as they can survive and you know, continue to move forward in the tournament.
Yeah, they've had 8 turnovers so far in this game.
Which is a good number for them, just been timely.
Yep, A&M has converted those into 8 points. They're not quite 7 minutes into the second half of the game, with A&M now leading 60-50. As for the Badgers, this matchup, and we'll hear more from Greg Gard in our pregame interview coming up after a bit, but these teams are similar in the respect that they both love to shoot the three. BYU has been shooting it considerably better. You look back to the last 10 games, and the Cougars are 39% from three. The Badgers are 30%, and that includes the 19 out of 32 that they rained on UCLA. So against Montana, with their size and strength, they're able to get it done inside, 55% overall. And today you're going to have to start hitting some threes, aren't you?
Well, you are. And you look at this BYU team makes 10.7 threes. It's 10th in the country. Wisconsin makes 9.9. That's 28th in the country. I mean, as simple as this game will be, it's going to come down to the three-point line. Now, there's other things that will happen as far as transition defense. BYU really looks to push ahead with that pass, so you got to get back. And the reason in transition it's so tough,